When my babies were going through their exploration stage, I had so much to worry about. Falling over, bumping heads. What did she just put in her mouth? The list was endless. But when they were in Pampers Swaddlers, I knew I never had to worry about a leaky diaper. Swaddlers are great for both baby and mommy. They keep your baby's skin healthy and dry with Pampers Breathe Free Liner, which wicks away wetness, allowing your baby's skin to breathe. Swaddlers have always given me peace of mind, knowing that diaper rash and leaky diapers were not in our future. There's also the new blowout barrier at the back waist to help prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Pampers Swaddlers are dermatologist approved by the Skin Health Alliance, hypoallergenic, and free of parabens and latex. Your baby deserves that. And they're available in a wide range of sizes from newborn to size 8, and now feature designs with the newest animal characters, Shiloh the elephant and Freddy the duck. Having a diaper you can depend on is important, and it's why I have always loved Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today to start earning rewards with every diaper and wipes purchase. Not to mention, get great parenting content with Pampers Club. Director and producer Loira Limbal knows the power of showing rather than telling. Her newest Verite film, Through the Night, follows three working moms whose lives all intersect at a 24-hour daycare center. It is a compelling portrait of the care economy and the love and strength that is demanded of working moms. Loira, thank you so much for doing this.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I watched the doc. I loved it. I cried. I think this entire pandemic has just brought into focus what moms are up against, what caretakers are up against, the amount that we rely on our caretakers in order to build our own careers. So I don't know that this documentary could have come at a better time.
Thank you, first of all, for the kind words. It means a lot. It does. It really does. You know, you have to think. I haven't seen the film with audiences. We were supposed to premiere at Tribeca last April, and Tribeca was canceled. So I have yet to see the film with an audience. So every time someone shares, you know, their thoughts about the film, I'm like holding on to that feedback for dear life because it's all I have to go on. And yeah, in terms of the timing, it's just sort of ironic and serendipitous, all the things combined, because we started working on the film in 2016. So it really was long before COVID. We were wanting to highlight the importance of the people in the film, their lives, their labor, because it was already overlooked and undervalued. And then with the pandemic, it's just really laid all of it up there for everyone to see.
Take me back to the moment when you said, okay, this 24-hour daycare center, this has to be the nexus of my next documentary.
So I learned about these tots, the daycare in the film, through an article that I read. I'm a mother myself. I have two children, and I'm part of several mothers groups online and things like that. And someone shared an article that was looking at the fact that people in the U.S. increasingly have to work more than one job to make ends meet, that many times those jobs require overnight hours or irregular hours, and then posing the question of, given that reality, who looks after people's children? There was a lot of statistics, and then there was a bit about the daycare providers and some of the parents who rely on them for care. And as I was reading their stories, it immediately brought me back to my childhood in a very visceral way, because my mother was also a caregiver. She worked as a home health aide, and she worked the night shift. She worked from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. and raised four kids in New York City on minimum wage. I'm the oldest, so, you know, at a really young age, I became her right hand. And I think a lot of her struggles, I was hyper aware of from very young and marked me in a lot of different ways. And so in reading these folk stories, there was this kind of feeling of recognizing and seeing your own story or a bit of your story in the lives of people that you haven't even met, and that creates a real sense of connection. And subsequently, I thought about the fact that I'm now 42, so things really have not changed. And, you know, this is like a 30 plus year difference from when my mother was raising me to today. And sitting with that and, you know, just being angered by that. And then as a filmmaker, really feeling like part of the reason that things don't change is because you sort of can't change what you can't see and what you can't name. And these stories are very invisible in our mainstream. And there's a way in which I think feminist spaces often miss the experiences of low-income and working-class women of color. And then the labor movement and labor conversations miss the experiences of that very same population. And we fall in this gap. We fall through these cracks, you know? So that's what I sort of became obsessed with telling the story and sharing, first with the community itself, to have a depiction, a portrait of itself, but also with the world beyond.
Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Shopify is the e-commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big it is you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is truly a global force powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Latina. Go to shopify.com/Latina to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.com/Latina. When my babies went through their exploration stage, I had so much to worry about. Falling over, bumping heads. What did she just put in her mouth? The list was endless. But when they were in Pampers Swaddlers, I knew I never had to worry about a leaky diaper. Swaddlers are great for both baby and mommy. They keep your baby's skin healthy and dry with Pampers Breathe Free Liner, which wicks away wetness, allowing your skin to breathe. Swaddlers have always given me peace of mind knowing that diaper rash and leaky diapers are not in our future. There's also the new blowout barrier at the back waist to help prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Pampers Swaddlers are dermatologist approved by the Skin Health Alliance, hypoallergenic, and free of parabens and latex. Your baby deserves that. And they're available in a wide range of sizes from newborn to size 8, and now feature designs with the newest animal characters, Shiloh the elephant and Freddy the duck. Having a diaper you can depend on is important, and is why I have always loved Pampers, the number one pediatrician-recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today to start earning rewards with every diapers and wipes purchase. Not to mention, you can get great parenting content with Pampers Club.
What's up, everybody? I'm Steve Ott Lewis, a licensed psychotherapist and host of How to Talk to High Achievers About Anything. I'm excited to share big news. How to Talk to High Achievers About Anything is back. This time, I'll be joined by a very special person, someone whose name you know very well.
Hi, everybody. I'm Juleka Lantigua, founder of LWC Studios.
Welcome, Juleka.
I'm so excited. And by the way, I'll be taking notes. So many notes.
As always, on the show, we get to hear stories from Black and brown folks who are out there doing great and amazing things. Then I do my thing of offering some feedback and strategies to help us navigate personal and professional challenges. Together, we'll figure out how to achieve on our own terms.
Subscribe to or follow How to Talk to High Achievers About Anything everywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. On Twitter and Instagram, you can follow the show at Talk to Achievers.
I love any project that begins with an obsession. Through the Night follows the lives of three moms. Their lives intersect at this daycare. So you had to engage several people about being a part of the film in order to make it work. What did that look like? And how do you convince someone that they want to be a part of something like this?
So part of my ethos as a filmmaker is that I don't ever want to convince anyone. I approach people and share what my vision is and share what is driving that vision and what my intentions are, highest hopes, some of the fears, and then, you know, make the proposal. Do you want to join it? And part of what was beautiful about working on this film was that in many ways it really felt like a true collaboration, because Nunu, who is in many ways the heart of the film, was very clear, you know, around why she wanted to participate in this. Marisol, who is one of the mothers in the film, also was clear, and Shinona as well. So they were active and enthusiastic participants, which is the kind of projects that I like to work on. I don't like to feel like I am cajoling or convincing folks to share their stories with me, because it's so delicate. You're asking people to open the doors to their homes, their lives, their children. It's something I don't take lightly.
How do you earn that trust?
Part of my process is spending time with folks before bringing cameras into a space, and also sharing about myself in personal sort of terms as well. You know, I think about, you're asking, as a filmmaker, as a documentary filmmaker, you're often asking people to share intimate details of their lives with you. And I think there is a power dynamic, you know, obviously for you as a filmmaker coming in with a camera, and particularly when you're working with communities that are underrepresented or misrepresented. And part of the way that I like to at least address, you know, that power dynamic is sharing back some of the intimate details of my life, which in this case had a lot to do with why I was obsessed to begin with. There's my mother's story, but there's also my own experience of being a single working mother of two children and grappling with a lot of things. And I think there was a part of me that really needed to bear witness to the experiences of other mothers who I see as, you know, myself, as my community, as my sisters, to bear witness to their experience, to sort of make sense of my own.
It's the first moment in the film when I cried, which was watching just a mom and her kids go down the stairs, and one kid trips and they're in a rush and they have to sit there and cuddle the kid, but the other kid wants to be cuddled, you know. And it's like, it is such a universal experience of being a mom who's just totally exhausted, has nothing left to give. At that exact moment, there's a mini crisis and everyone needs you to be at 110%. My heart just broke for her, because I was like, I have so many more resources at my disposal, and I still know that deep, deep core exhaustion of having nothing left to give and having to find it.
Absolutely. And I think this is part of, on a kind of deeper level, some of what I was interested in making visible. You know, one of my questions that I've had about my mother, but I have it about a lot of women and mothers in my life, is precisely what you're saying. Like, how do you give when you're running on empty? You know, where do you draw from? Where do we draw from? In some way, somehow, we continue to give and nurture, right? With flaws, and no one is perfect, obviously. But some way, somehow, so many mothers are still able to pour out even when there's nothing being poured in. And that was part of the question, because I think there is a way in which our conversation about motherhood and mothering in the United States, it's very reduced and very sanitized. Obviously, that's changing over time. But, you know, there's so much about this experience. It's, you know, perhaps one of the most complex, sacred, universal, all the things, right? All the big adjectives that you could think of, parts of the human experience. But because of sexism and patriarchy and all of the things, it's been reduced and sanitized and kind of dismissed. And then we're all left individually to grapple and struggle with whatever we're confronted with. And we feel like we have to do that on our own, in private, quietly, because to say anything is to be open to judgment and criticism and then all the shame and all the guilt that comes along with that. And so there was a part of me, too, that wanted to surface that. For someone like Shanona, who is a nurse, who works the night shift in the pediatric ER and is a single mother, there's a part in the film where she says, I feel guilty. You know, I'm exhausted. I don't know what rest is. I don't know when that happens or when people get it. And I feel guilty because even though I'm with my children during the daytime, I really can't give them as much of myself as I would like to. And these things, I think, are important to surface and make visible because there's so many mothers in that same position who are walking around with all of that guilt and that guilt turning into shame, when in reality, they're doing the best that they can. And they're not struggling because of some sort of personal shortcoming or personal failure. They're struggling because it's hard, because our system is inhumane and very cruel. And there is not support for working families, not for mothers, and certainly not for single mothers, you know?
I'll ask you a few more questions about filmmaking itself. I had a conversation with Christina Constantini, who's also a documentarian. She did the doc about Walter Mercado. And you know, she talked about how verite is hard because you are around. And some days you get something amazing. And some days people are just living their lives and nothing is quite popping. And in her case, of course, she was with Walter Mercado. So he kept like mugging for the camera and performing for her. But I think that happens even a little bit with people who aren't performers, right? That when there is a camera around, there is a desire to perform. How do you make yourself as unobtrusive as possible? How do you make sure that you are not, with your presence, changing the dynamic of what is happening in the room?
I think part of the way to be unobtrusive, in my case, was keeping our crew small. And so it was typically myself and one camera person, sometimes a sound person, and that was it. And we would try to distribute ourselves throughout the space as best we could. But also understanding that there's always a natural period of people adjusting to the camera. And in a space like the daycare, because there is this really critical thing happening, which is caregiving, the kind of the attention and the interruption that the cameras and the equipment cause does dissipate because people eventually have to get back to what they're doing.
My understanding is it took 4 years to make the film. I think it's hard if you haven't done this to wrap your mind how 4 years goes into 90 minutes worth of product. So can you walk me through what was happening over the course of those years?
One huge thing I would say for documentary films, part of what takes so long is fundraising. It's not necessarily that you're producing and editing and actually making the things the whole time. A lot of the time gets spent applying for grants or applying for things or pitching, waiting to hear back, getting rejections, you know, doing it again. And so that's a huge part of the process for documentaries. If it's a truly independent sort of passion project, if it's not commissioned by an entity that's coming in with the full budget. So that's one part of it, which is probably at least half of the time is that. And then the other half of the time when you're making a verite film is that for me, it's important to meet protagonists at whatever point I meet them, and then follow them over time to allow for the natural change and growth that happens in everyone's lives. And also for me to get kind of perspective on the story that I'm telling. So you come in with your original premise and the themes that excite you, then you have to confront the reality, like Christina said, of what is actually happening in people's lives. And then you have to sort of adjust. Sometimes you have to let things sit and marinate. Then you have to pivot. For us, because time was perhaps the scarcest resource in everyone's lives, both the protagonist and my own. So in our case, we shot about 21 or 22 days over the course of 4 years. And because time was such a kind of scarce resource in everyone's lives, both the protagonist and my own, because I was making the film while I was working my full-time job, my kind of 9-to-5, and raising my kids. You know, I sometimes joke that I made this film on my third shift, and that's, I named my company Third Shift Media. We were sort of really deliberate on when we would shoot. So we shot on days like the first day of school, for example, because as a parent, I know that there's chaos always on the first day of school. Holidays, you know, because for obvious reasons, if you're a parent who is working throughout the holidays, there's obviously things that come up, you know, that would speak to the main themes that I wanted to address. So there was that piece of being very deliberate about when we shot. And then there was the edit, which we sort of started, we would stop, we would start again. All in all, that's how you end up with a four-year process.
You studied history at Brown. You're a graduate of the Third World Newsreel Film and Video Production Training Program. But how did you really become a filmmaker?
I became a filmmaker over time. I worked on one film. I co-directed a film called Estilo Hip Hop we started working on it in the early 2000s and finished around 2008. And I started working on that film with no real training or, you know, any experience. And my co-director didn't have experience either. It was a story that we found ourselves immersed in, and that once again really spoke to us in this way that was undeniable, and we couldn't kind of ignore it. You know, there are these ideas and these things that you try to talk yourself out of doing, and they won't leave you alone. And that was the case with Estilo Hip Hop. You know, very passionate about culture and music and hip hop. And I was living in Brazil. My co-director was from Chile. And the hip hop movements in Latin America and the Caribbean were so strong and vibrant that we felt like this was a story that we absolutely had to tell. I jumped into it. And in the process of making that film, I realized I really enjoyed documentary filmmaking. And so when I finished, I needed a job. I needed some stability. I needed some health insurance. I had some health issues. So there was an opening at my job, which is my full-time job now, which is Firelight Media. There was an opening for an office manager. And I was like, this is perfect because I'll have a regular paycheck. I'll have, you know, health insurance. And I'll be learning and working alongside, you know, some of the most amazing and prolific documentary filmmakers of color in the United States. And so, you know, it was like kind of the process of jumping into something that I was passionate about and then realizing, like, I really love this thing and this is the space that I want to stay in.
This is an industry, like, honestly, most of the industries that we talk about that is just so opaque. So I read all of these distinctions you have, like a Sundance Institute Warner Fellow and a Ford Foundation Just Films Rockwood Fellow. What do those things actually mean in your journey?
Some of them come along with grants, right? So they're like recognition that you're an important filmmaker or your voice, you know, matters, and they want to support you via money. Other times it's been fellowships that provide the recognition. And when I say recognition, it's like for the field and the rest of the industry to take note. And it's almost like providing you with a stamp of approval or some validity, like you matter and you're a filmmaker that other people should take note of, which obviously is really problematic because they're gatekeepers and they're deciding whose stories and whose voices matter. But, you know, in my journey, it has meant that, you know, and kind of every one thing that you get does end up opening other doors or coming along with other opportunities. The fellowships have also meant a space of community and a space of creative rigor, which really has been invaluable. For example, with Through the Night, we were selected for the Sundance Documentary Edit Lab. And that's an experience that's really rigorous. It was really meaningful. You know, my editor, Malika Zuhali Warao, and I were able to spend 9 days together on, you know, the Sundance Resort in the mountains with all of these amazing, super prolific and experienced editors looking at all of our projects and workshopping things with us and giving us masterclass. Those kinds of experiences are really invaluable in many ways.
To say nothing of having 9 days away from your children to focus on anything.
Absolutely. Malika is also a mother. And if you know, for us, it was like we were working 10-hour days, but we felt like we were on vacation. You know, it's like, because we could wake up by ourselves, go to the bathroom by yourself, like shower, all the things that are luxurious.
I haven't gone to the bathroom by myself in 4 years. That in and of itself sounds like a vacation. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is very chicken and egg. Like, we can debate whether you need the training and institutional support to fund and create these projects. But so often that support is predicated on your having made or produced something. So how do you work around that? Do you have to put your own capital in at the beginning?
It's a real issue because there isn't a lot of monies or opportunities out there to support the process of developing a project, right? Like doing research and development. And so for Through the Night, what I did was I negotiated a bartering reduced rate situation with the DP that I worked with at the beginning and with the editor. And these were people that I knew and whose work, and I knew I wanted to work with them on the project long-term. And I sort of said, like, if we could do this at this rate, you know, then I will use what we create here and use it to raise money, to raise the R&D money, right? To actually raise the research and development money. But I had to do the research and development before I had to even be able to get the R&D grant, which is another huge problem because it means that you need to be able to do that.
You said something profound. You put something away that I had not thought about, which is that over the past few years, we have seen so many images of children at the border being separated from their parents, being treated inhumanely. We've seen so much over-policing of Black and Latino youth that it was important to you to show children of color being cared for and loved by people of color. That punches right through in the film. I did wonder, as you were producing this, if you ever caught yourself producing for the white gaze and how you then caught yourself and corrected.
I did not find myself thinking about the white gaze. I had names and faces of people that I was making the film for. And you know, they literally were like people that I know in real life from different parts of my life. And they were, you know, I was thinking about Nunu watching it and Shanona watching it and Mari watching it and their kids watching the film and my mother watching the film and my best friend who is also a nurse watching the film. So that's why I made the film for. You know, really, like, I literally had names and faces that I was thinking about. And that's part of the reason that I say I was trying to create a cinematic love letter, you know, to women of color. And you know, that's not to say that everything is kind of rosy or romanticized. You know, obviously people are struggling and up against quite a lot of difficulties and challenges. But I did want to create something that would allow these women, these people that I had in mind, that would allow them to see themselves the way that I see them. And I see them as, like, just, you know, amazing and radical and visionary, and, you know, to do the work that they do, to be who they are in the world that we live in, to me is nothing short of visionary and radical and subversive, you know?
I'm so excited for the world to see this film. Laura, congratulations. It is exquisite, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I've enjoyed this so much.
Thank you for joining us. Latina to Latina is executive produced and owned by Juleka Lentico Williams and me, Alicia Menendez. Paulina Velasco is our senior producer. Our lead producer is Cedric Wilson. Kojin Tashiro is our associate sound designer. Manuela Bedoya is our social media editor and ad ops lead. We love hearing from you when you email us at hola@latinatolatina.com, when you slide into our DMs on Instagram, when you tweeted us at Latina to Latina. Remember to subscribe, follow us on Radio Public, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening. And please, I know I ask this all the time, but do leave a review. It is one of the fastest, easiest ways to help us grow.